Welcome to the audio spells production of Journeys of the Astral Path's Michael. I'm Robin, and we are ecstatic to bring you this show. Please help us grow by subscribing, 5-star reviews, liking, sharing, and commenting wherever you enjoy your podcasts. For more information and our full credits, please visit www.theastralpaths.com or search Journeys of the Astral Paths on Facebook. And now, let us cast you a spell.
I just needed a second. Okay, yeah. And a single malt scotch. Neat. Wine isn't gonna cut it. Not for this part. So here it ends. I mean, the ending of my beginnings. If that even makes sense. Terence Smithson had turned back to Cassandra, examining her. Not as a doctor, but as a grieving lover. He touched her cheek, gently avoiding the tube that descended from her mouth. When he turned back to me, my entire life changed. His green eyes met mine, and a surge of energy tingled up through my toes and rested in my scalp as the door to his mind opened wide to me. I didn't know what reading a mind would be. I guess I'd assumed it was like reading a page of text, with anecdotes and asides or something, maybe some highlighting. I mean, come on, I never believed anyone could do it anyway. So how do I put this into words? I was bound to Terence with a kind of energy tether, a pulse, if you will, that bound my mind to his. If you've ever felt during a dream that you were absolutely not dreaming, and that this reality was your everyday life, it is a bit like this, as their thoughts are their reality and you see it in vivid pictures, both from their point of view and how they see themselves being observed. And there is sound, no text by the way, but their internal monologue is present and in the moment, and behind that there are memories. Memories that cycle through like a film out of sequence, but supporting the reaction to the moment, to that internal monologue of the now. I felt this agony over losing Cassandra. I saw him talking to her in his office that fateful day he asked her to look at him. I saw it through his eyes, my sister's lovely, shy face. I saw them walking along a city street in front of the Mayan movie theater. I saw them kissing, awkwardly, in his Volvo parked along the curb of a quiet street. Saw them taking a swim together, cooking breakfast in t-shirts and underwear, and all of it through his eyes. I even saw her getting undressed to get in bed with him, doing a goofy striptease with her thick winter socks, and it was there that I pulled myself away from this union. The force of which, as I had no training yet, threw me backward and I collapsed under the chair behind me. Marlowe knew what was happening. He read Terence's confusion with my reaction, because to Terence, nothing had happened between us, except I'd looked into his face for a second and then fell backwards as if I'd been caught by a punch to the jaw. You see, when I'm reading someone's thoughts, it's fast, really fast. Time doesn't speed up or slow down. It's just that we can process information zooming at us at nearly lightning speed, like watching a movie on fast forward max. But somehow, the information absorbs vividly. "I've got him," Marlowe stated, grabbing my arm. "He's dizzy with the drugs. I'll get him back to his room." He got me to my feet. "Thank you," Terence said. Marlowe just smiled. Knowing Terence was expecting a name or explanation as to who he was, But Marlowe avoided that. He simply said, "No problem." We walked back to my room. "You read him," he said, helping me back onto the bed. "You read his thoughts." "Yeah. And that's what it's all about? Reading someone? I mean, that's what we can do?" Marlowe looked at me closely. "I'm not sure what you were able to discern. I'm certain of this. I can help you, teach you, in the way you read minds. You can become very clear, direct, and focused on reading thoughts. When you first start, a lot of what happens is just a glut of information, randomness of those messy human brains. What you must do is focus your probe to sort of direct their thoughts. Otherwise, you'll get hit with so much, it can just be garble." "Maybe I already kind of know how to do that," I mumbled, still using my mouth to communicate with him. "I mean," I continued speaking more clearly, "I saw what I needed to see about Cassandra, about my sister. I saw them together, heard them giggle, saw the day he asked her out, smiles, sighs, and I saw them kiss. Christ, I nearly watched them make love, and that was when I broke off the connection. No brother should have to see that. But I saw enough to know. The thing, and this is the worst of it, he knows she isn't going to make it." Marlowe waited. He wasn't sure if I was done, and he wasn't sure what to do for me. My emotions were just too high, and emotions were something, perhaps after decades of reading human minds, filled with their drama, horrors, passions, and obsessions, he'd become jaded to. He was ever the college professor, reasoning and pontificating through thoughts, but remaining above them on a personal level. When I said nothing, he finally spoke. "Michael, your sister is not going to live through this. I hope I didn't give you false hope about that. I read the thoughts of the doctors and nurses that have been in her room, and the one thing they all know is that if the light support is turned off, she will die. This isn't a rescue mission that I'm asking you to go on. It's a mission of mercy. Mercy for her, and later, perhaps mercy for yourself, that with this end, it ended right." I was listening to Marlowe, but also reliving Terence's memories, reliving Cassandra's smile. It was the sun in which Terence's every look or word orbited. God, he loved her. I finally said out loud, "Man, did she love him. They may have only had a short time together, but this was not an affair or a fling or fast date. This was love. Happiness." So that was the meaning of his thoughts. I stood up. "I need to go to her." "Actually," he said, "once you've had the connection with her, you're close enough right here. Why don't you lay down and reach out to her?" Moments later, I was once again in the backyard of my youth. Cassandra was standing at the back door of the house, staring at it in an attempt to find a door handle which wasn't there. "Mikey," she greeted me, "the door won't open. I've knocked and I've searched all over for the handle, but there isn't one, and no one will answer." "We were never meant to be in there, Cassandra. That's why that door stayed shut," I told her. She looked closely at me. "Huh, maybe you're right." Cassandra turned, jumping off the small stone porch, and landed next to me on the grass. She giggled, and then her laughter seemed to shake her body up from her knees. She was quivering, and then it intensified to nearly a seizure as spasms ravaged her. "Cassandra, Cassandra, are you okay?" I cried, reaching out to her, but she stepped away from me. The pain comes sometimes. It goes. I can take it. I'm fine. Behind her in the yard, nothing remained. Not the fence or the fort or the swings or any random items from some summer day. She saw my concern. She blinked as if trying to remember something. Swings, yes, we were on swing last time, but nothing appeared. Nothing changed, and her shoulders sagged with her inability to conjure the past and comfort her brother. Tell me about it. I don't remember, Mikey. I know the word, but not the... She was searching for that strength, that power she'd always had in every part of my life, that amazing will she'd had to keep two kids on their own, moving forward, believing, and united. Sis, I began, we're all we've ever had. She completed it for me, and all we'll ever need. But then I motioned for her to be silent, and I spoke with a strength I'm not sure I knew I had. That will never change, and will always be. You pulled me through our childhood, and you protected me and guided me, and mostly you made me strong. But now you need to believe I'm strong. I'm not that little boy anymore. You can believe I'll be okay. Let me take care of you. Let me let you go. Cassandra had within her a rarely seen temper, a kind of teeth-grinding, smoldering rage that I only saw firsthand twice. Once when my father, out of his mind drunk and high, slapped my mother when she accused him of sleeping with someone else. They didn't see us enter the kitchen and sadly played out this drama in front of us. Cassandra was only 10 or 11, but she screamed so loud at him to stop that he began to cry with shame and stormed from the room, avoiding her scorn. The second time was far worse. On my high school graduation weekend, I was hanging out with some friends. We went up to Boulder to see you, to attend a party. The saying at CU is we've got the best snow for skiing and the best powder for blowing. I'd never tried cocaine, but this party had lines being drawn everywhere, and well, I had always wondered what drew my parents to their untimely demise. Looking into the flame, I guess. My sister was going to surprise me with my graduation gift, two tickets for she and I to go to San Francisco, ride trolleys and eat lobster tails. She knew the group of friends I was with and entered the house to excited hails from everyone. But when her eyes fell on me, white powder smeared about my nostrils and lines formed on the mirror in my lap, that crowd of partiers melted away when she glared over the din of music and chatter. Mikey, get your ass up and let's go. In the movies, somehow the music always stops. It didn't. But everyone heard, and the chatter fell silent. I was flying high. But when you let down Cassandra, like father, like son, I guess, the euphoria faded instantly. During our drive home, she hit me with worse. Silence. And I never once tried drugs again. So Cassandra heard my plea for her to let go, and I could sense her gathering that mighty temper to object. But her eyes locked on mine, and she was no astropath, but she read everything she needed to know in that stare. Then her face relaxed, as if the pain and struggle of everything in life was fading to a distant memory. A lost horizon. We're all we've ever had and all we'll ever need. I love you, Mikey. When I opened my eyes, Marlo was sitting in the chair by my bed. I don't know if you're an astropath or an angel, but thanks, I told him. Oh, I'm an astropath, and so are you, he assured me. I'm sorry for your loss, Michael. When you're ready, simply concentrate on me. We can begin your study. I was about to say thanks. He was already gone, knowing what I was going to say long before I said it.